Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hello there, everybody. This is John for Tracking Connection podcast, and this is episode 14. And today, Sarah and I are joined by Nate Summers, who's a partner with us in Living Connection First Village, and we've done 100 episodes of Monday Musings for our village as a podcast, the three of us. So this is, the format's going to be a little different, because normally, you know, it's Sarah and I and Aiden asking questions, but today we're going to have Nate lead a conversation with Sarah and I about a very fun topic, which we all really love. So I'm really thankful for that, Nate. Glad to have you here. Thankful for the topic, advanced awareness, and all that that points to in terms of tracking connections. So yeah, grateful for this day where the marine layer is just below our 2,000-foot elevation at our home. And so we're getting the cold effect of the air, even though the sun is shining and the sky is blue. It's making it chilly up here, but it's a beautiful spring day, and I'm very, very grateful for all the lovely birds that have been just parading through today. I've seen so many today. It's been wonderful. And all the gorgeous spring plants, and I'll pass it over to Sarah.
Thank you. Yeah. Hi, everyone. Sarah here, calling in from the traditional land of the Chitone Band of the Ohlone people in the Sandhill Mountains of Santa Cruz here with John. I'm feeling really grateful for the beautiful flowers that are popping up everywhere in my garden. The perennials that I planted last year are just booming. And then out on my wander today, I met a couple new species of plant that I've never met before. One is a purple owl's clover. It's an absolutely gorgeous little flower. And I'm fairly new to this area. And right before I moved here, there was a big fire. So I don't know that I've ever seen this plant here or ever before in my life. Anyway, grateful for beauty and grateful for plants and the sun. And I'll pass it to Nate.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, John. It's fun being here with you two in Tracking Connections podcast, a little different than what we normally do. And yeah, I have some gratitude today as well for sun. We've had a great deal of weather in the last 48 hours here in a traditional Snoqualmie territory in the Snoqualmie Valley where I live in Washington State, pretty close to the intersection of the Snoqualmie Rivers. We've had a lot of rain on and off in the last 48 hours, as well as some pretty wild and fun sun breaks where it gets quite warm. So weather has definitely been erratic, to say the least. And yeah, I'll just express my gratitude to the trees. Right now, all the trees' leaves are all out. There's a myriad of colors of leaves, mostly shades of green. And yeah, it'll relate to some stories I'm sharing later. But I'm just thankful for the cottonwoods. Had a fun experience with cottonwood just this morning. Okay, yeah, I'm just really excited and really appreciate John and Sarah taking some time to talk about a favorite topic of all three of us, right? Like, this is sort of like, I don't know, this is the juice. It gets us excited. And honestly, it's been the topic that's really united the three of us in some very fun projects over the last 4 years, 5 years, something like that. It kind of helped to bring us out of COVID, I think. And this is what we would, you know, kind of term this idea of advanced awareness. I think there's a whole spectrum of human awareness, including, you know, just helping us get very back into our core senses and using them regularly. That is, you know, sort of fundamental to being human. But then there's all of these subtle things that happen when you start to do that regularly. And, you know, there's different cultures that talk about this. There's, you know, stories that people have about this. These sort of borderline sound like magical, though they're not magical, things that happen for people around, say, feeling something in their body and then following that pull and then finding something really cool on the trail, like a feather or of a bird that they were looking for, or finding tracks of an animal. Or the really common one I think that everybody has is that sense of you're being watched and you turn and you look and somebody's looking at you, or vice versa. I think we've all had the experience of we're looking at somebody and then suddenly they feel that sense of being gazed at and they turn and look at us. you know, or the mind's eye flash where something, we get a, you know, an image in our mind, and then just a few moments later we encounter whatever that image was. And it's very common with phone calls, right? Like from relatives or people we haven't heard from for a long time, people to get an image in their mind, and then suddenly what happens, that person's called. I like almost everybody I talk to has had that happen or some variation on that, right? So we're going to be talking about those really interesting things that can happen to us around this, really opening up the door to possibility and belief around this, because, you know, there's so much internal skepticism and, you know, that we can have around these things, or there maybe because we've been exposed to external skepticism. But really, I think these are fundamental perceptual capabilities, sensory abilities that people have, especially when they get deeply connected to nature, especially when they're working on their connection practices, and when they really spend a lot of time in their senses. So we're going to each share a couple little stories, I think, and yeah, also share, you know, our recommendations around this. So, you know, definitely in my life, a lot of this has been around animals and animal encounters and tracking and finding tracker sign, as well as with birds. But I think I wanted to start off, I'm going to share a couple little stories, one of which is from today, around this with trees, because we don't necessarily always think of this with trees. So years ago, like probably almost 2 decades ago, maybe not quite 2 decades ago, I was out on a program teaching a bunch of teens out in nature. And I was with a fellow instructor. And I think it was a late fall, rainy, cold, borderline like freezing rain day. Intense circumstances to be outside, right? Like, what a challenge to be out in the Pacific Northwest, lush, you know, green, verdant, mossy landscape, but like the land's soaked with water. It's cold. It's, you know, afternoon, you know, it could be getting dark pretty soon. And doing this, I think it was an after school program, and with a fellow instructor. And we're like, oh my gosh, we have got to get a fire going for these students because, you know, we're borderline hypothermia here. So we decided to give them a fire challenge. Like, we're like, okay, everybody, like, go find some dry material. We're going to get a fire going, right? And, you know, they've been prepped on some stuff from previous classes, but they go out and, you know, it's a quick challenge. It's just a few minutes, and they come back and they have like wet leaves or wet branches, like, you know, all this stuff that it's like very hard to light, right? And so this is becoming like a very valuable exercise for them on one hand, right? The flip side is that it's now colder and they're wetter and they've gone through brush and, you know, we're cold and we're wet. And so I look at my fellow instructor, I'm like, we've got to get a fire going now. And I'm just like, okay, what I really need right now is I need a hemlock tree with dry branches underneath it, that I can go and grab a bundle of those, break them off, these dead branches. It's the way a hemlock tree grows. It grows with live branches on top and dead branches underneath. Break those branches off, you know, bring a pile back. You know, hopefully there's even some pitch in there that I can find, and we can take a lighter or a match and just get it going really fast. So I picture that strongly in my mind, right? So there's this need, right? There's this need for me to go find that. And, you know, the students, you know, we had sent them out and you know, they knew to go look for hemlocks, and none of them came back with dry hemlock. And as soon as I was like, okay, I got to go find this, you know, and the other instructor headed out the other direction, but I immediately felt this pull to my left, which I think was to the west at that time. And it must've been facing south. So I felt this pull, and I just looked through like a lot of forest, right? Like not just a little bit of forest, but there standing was a hemlock tree. And I could identify it from far away by the way the branches grew and the way the leader was. And I just felt this pull, and it was almost, not quite like this, but it was almost like the tree was lit up. And immediately I just walked over there relatively quickly through the brush, found a nice couple handfuls of dried branches, came back, met the other instructor, and got a fire going rather quickly, right, you know, off the trail in a nice little area. We had some rocks and we just got a quick fire going. And then we were able to, you know, all warm up by the fire. So it was this really wonderful example of like a need, a kind of a request, I think, put in there on my own. you know, just sort of unconsciously, but, you know, a request out to the universe and then a response. And so then we, you know, of course, had gratitude around the fire. That was, you know, many years ago, like I said, and really stuck with me because, like I said, I had had some of those experiences in the past with animal tracks and bird language and seeing animals. But this was, I think, the first time I'd had this experience with a tree or a plant. Fast forward to today, I'm over at the Snoqualmie River in the valley, and I'm having a great sit spot. And there's this like little, it's not a perfect ring in the clouds, but it's kind of this distorted ring of blue that's been hovering over the valley all morning as these big patches of dark clouds move in and out and move in and out. And at some point I know in my bones that it's going to rain at some point, right? So I'm enjoying sit spot. I'm getting ready to wrap up. And just at that point, it starts to rain, right? And it starts to rain, sprinkle a little bit. So I'm packing all my stuff. I really want to just kind of enjoy myself on the way out. I don't want to rush out because I've had this relaxing, deep sit spot experience. And as I'm getting ready to wander out, and then it starts to rain quite a bit harder. And I don't have good rain gear. Like I normally everywhere I go, every time I go out with rain gear. But today I was just like, well, it starts to rain, I'll just come back, you know. But I'd gone a little bit further than I expected, and you know, I had seen off to my right these cottonwoods, and like I turned to those cottonwoods, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll go over to those cottonwoods. But I just kept feeling this pull to my left, which would be south, and I was like, man, those cottonwoods are right there. But then I turned and looked, and there was another cottonwood, and it was to the south. And so I just felt pulled to go to that cottonwood, right? Like it was in my body, you know, like, oh, I better go this way. So I followed that urge, right? I listened to my body, and I went down there, and it had dumped rain last night. Like it rained early this morning, probably between like 4 and 6, it was like raining really hard. And so there was a lot of wetness out everywhere. And I got over to that big cottonwood, and it had a nice view of the river. So I was like, okay, well, this is kind of nice there. And there was some rain protection. And then I stepped up close to the cottonwood, and I'll just let everybody know, like, when I think of rain protection in the Pacific Northwest, I do not think of cottonwood trees. I think of hemlock trees. I think of cedar trees. Those are where I would go normally. But I got underneath this cottonwood tree, and I got right up against its east-facing bark, this kind of like wrinkled, thicker bark. It was a bigger cottonwood tree. And I realized that whole side of the tree was dry. And there was even a patch of ground on the right, about like 6 inches, maybe 8 inches, coming out from the base of that tree that was dry. And I just stood there. And even as it was raining pretty hard, I was dry. And somehow the cottonwood branches, as they were lined up right against the trunk, it was quite nice and dry. And I waited there for about 10 or 15 minutes, had a kind of nice, you know, standing spot, checking out the river, seeing everything respond to the rain. And then eventually the rain got light enough. I felt comfortable walking out, and it kind of petered on and off for a while. And by the time I got back to my car and drove home, it was definitely raining harder, but that cottonwood spot turned out to be the perfect spot to go be out of the rain today. Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that we wanted to share about, is these sort of, you know, listening to those pulls, listening to the internal sensing, and also, you know, reaching out with your intent and awareness, what can happen. And sort of, you know, the advanced awareness piece really is part of like trusting the information or the sensation we're getting, you know? So I will wrap up there, hopefully having set some context here. And I'm going to pass things over to Sarah, because I think Sarah has something to share about this as well.
I was really appreciating you talking about it, this kind of stuff being very natural and something that I believe we all have capacity for, and that it does take practice. And you named, you know, having a need and then having creating a request and then getting a response. And how do we actually attune ourselves to be able to hear the response or be aware of the response? And I also really loved how your tree lit up, because it's so often that when we're on a trail of an animal that's fresh, that the tracks seem to kind of light up. And I feel like that has happened for me over time by using visual practices to basically attune myself to these subtle nuances. You know, like when a deer bed is fresh, there's something about the pine needles that's different, right? That's a kind of a shininess, but then there's also something about the way that the light's reflecting because of the shininess. Anyway, the glow with the tree is, it really resonates with me, of some kind of aliveness in the response, right? Some kind of, you put out the question and then the answer is sending out some kind of signaling through that light. I don't know. That's a really cool depiction for me that I'm going to be asking questions about. But yeah, the story that I wanted to share happened just a couple months ago. It actually happened during one of the classes that I was taking with Tom Brown from Tracker School. John and I take all of Tom's online classes, highly recommend. His teaching is absolutely brilliant. And the class was actually about invisibility. That is a long-term practice for sure. But I can say that, you know, one of the simple ways of attaining invisibility is letting go of the self. So that was the practice, that the exercise that I was in when this story unfolded. I was sitting here just to the west of my house at the edge of the meadow, and I was practicing just letting go and just being in my senses and exhaling, you know, and letting go more and more and deeper of just kind of emptying myself. And then he had also prompted us to find a need, which wasn't hard for me. I was holding a really strong prayer around connection to this place. And it was a very specific prayer that I won't share the details of, but I was really asking for clear communication. I felt like I needed a sign, basically. And I was asking for that in a very humble way, you know, a very sincere way, and end with a knowing that you don't just ask for signs. Anyhow, that's what my question was, you know, is what I'm doing effective? Am I actually helping people, or are the practices that I partake in actually important as far as nature connection and people connection and the work that we do? So with that prayer, I kind of expanded my awareness out onto the landscape, and I got this flash of bobcat family in my mind's eye, and it was really clear, and I noticed it, and I also didn't think much about it because I love bobcats, and I'm always wondering about the bobcats, but I hadn't been particularly asking about them, so I just noticed that really clear picture and went back to letting go and being completely present in the moment and allowing my mind to kind of dissolve. And suddenly I had been sitting there for maybe like 10 minutes. And suddenly I just got this pull in my body that was basically urging me to get up. And I feel the pull kind of in my lower belly. And I sit with it for a minute just to make sure I'm not being impulsive or I'm moving from anxiety or something like that. And I got really clear that, no, my body's asking me to get up and move. So I get up and I follow where this pole is pulling me. And I walk like 15 feet further west. And I'm like asking my body, feeling my body, like, is this the spot? And it feels like a yes. And then I turn to the south and face the forest. There was something about my body wanting to face that direction. And I sat down there and I noticed that I was right on the edge of the shadow line. So I was sitting in the sun and I was right on the edge of the shadow and I was looking into the forest. And I just sat there and I was curious about, why am I sitting here looking into the forest? And about a minute went by of just me observing where I had landed, and out of the forest, I see this small animal walking toward me. And I'm like, wow, there's a small animal walking toward me. Who is that? And as it approaches, I'm like, that's a baby bobcat. No. Yes, that is a baby bobcat. And it's walking directly toward me. And luckily I'm doing invisibility practice, so it didn't notice me. And I thought for sure, because I was having these excited thoughts and feelings, that those thoughts and feelings would alert the animal to my presence. So I continued to let go, right? And just really observe and appreciate. And so the baby bobcat, so he was probably 3 months old, came all the way to the edge of the forest. He was still at the edge of, you know, inside of the forest in the shade. And then right at the edge of the forest, turned east and walked up the edge of the forest. I wasn't moving a muscle until they went behind a tree, and I knew they wouldn't be able to see me. So I turned my head so I didn't have to strain my eyes anymore and watched it continue to walk up the edge of the forest. And it never saw me. And, you know, I sat there for several minutes after it had passed just to not cause any disturbance. I didn't try to follow it, but then I actually did have to go in for the exercise, and I did have to pass where it was, and I heard it kind of scurry away as I passed it. And also, John was coming from the other direction also to come inside from the exercise. So we kind of put it in a little bit of an uncomfortable situation. Anyhow, I really had to sit with that experience. You know, I had to really backtrack. Okay, what was I asking? I was asking if what I do is effective. I was asking for a sign. And that is what happened. And I mean, I share this like very vulnerably, because it's a very sacred experience to have a question answered in such a profound and absolutely gorgeous way. And so I guess what I want to wrap up with is I got some immediate understanding of the meaning of that experience, but I also continued to revisit that experience because there was a lot in that moment, in that the place of that experience, that I feel as medicine. And as I return to it and I look at how did that all unfold, there's something in there that I can learn from forever, maybe, at least for a very long time.
Yeah, that was beautiful, Sarah. I really appreciate the honesty and vulnerability in sharing. And I think that's something we find with these experiences, is it can even be difficult to find language to talk about them. You know, it's definitely, for me, the opposite of how I was sort of raised with these things, taught to disregard rather than regard or tune into these things. And yeah, the sort of miracle of what can happen when we do ask for something, you know. Well, I'm really curious to hear from John here about this. Really, a lot of what I have experienced and learned about this relates to things John shared with me or shared with many people at different times and set me and many others on this path. So John, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this topic and what you'd like to share today about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I guess there, in essence, there's no coincidences, right? When you really start to pay attention to these moments, when there's a pull or there's a need or a deep question or a really sincere curiosity coming from a innocent core part of ourselves, you know, the answers often come in ways that you just can't explain. And, you know, I often tell the story of Tom Brown when I was in my teens. You know, I began to notice that when I had a deep need to get an answer to a question about tracking or about bird language, as you were saying, Nate, or about a tree, you know, the answer would bump into it essentially, right? And at that age, like, I am not aware, you know, how you, like you were, both of you in both your stories, you're aware of something pulling you, right? I got to turn to the left and there I see the hemlock tree lit up. Something makes me stand up and I have to walk 15 feet. And then I'm like, yep, this is the place. And then I sit down. It's like when we're adults, we're aware that we have to pay attention for signals that are a little bit subtle. If our thinking mind is busy, we miss them altogether. But I think when we're children, we automatically just do that stuff and we don't even know that we're doing it. It just sort of happens, right? You just kind of, yeah, why wouldn't I go that way kind of thing, right? And so I was having a lot of those experiences kind of back to back. You know, Tom was talking to me about it, asking me questions. I was sharing the story. And he says, what do you think of that? How you got that answer? I said, oh, coincidence. And I have to admit, I've been guilty of saying coincidence the last three or four conversations I had with Tom over the last week, right? So he says, coincidence, huh? And I'm like, well, you know, what else could it be? You know, it's got to be coincidence, right? There's no explanation otherwise. It was just a random occurrence that happened to be cool. He's like, when the 99th coincidence turns 100, will you still call it a coincidence? And I kind of looked at him and I thought to myself, probably will. You know, I was very, as Nate was referring to, very, you know, taught to dismiss this stuff, or it was modeled to me to dismiss this kind of thing. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, John, I want you to do something for me. And I'm like, what's that? He said, I want you to get a journal, and you can call it coincidence journal if you want to, but put it in quotation marks. And he says, I want you to start tracking coincidences and number them in order. And when the 99th turns 100, I want you to get in touch with me and let's have a conversation about it. So it took about 3 years for that to actually finally happen. You know, the 99th turned 100, and it was quite a remarkable, impossible series of things lining up that involved people coming by my dorm, knocking on my door, asking me if I wanted to go to breakfast. And normally I'm super excited to go with my friends to breakfast at college. I'm a freshman and trying to hang out with the cool people, you know, and my body told me to say no. And I was like really surprised. And they were also kind of surprised because I always say yes. And there was this awkward moment, this tension. I'm like, you sure? Come on. I'm like, I'll tell you what, I feel like I need to stay here. And if I change my mind, I'll come and find you guys, right? I know where you are. I know where the dining hall is. And so off they went. And when they left, and I was sitting there on the edge of my bed in my dorm room all by myself, because my roommate went with them, I started to feel like I had made the wrong decision. But it was really my anxiety, like Sarah said, is this coming from anxiety or not? But I could really track that, no, there's a part of me that legitimately didn't want me to go. Like, it was a strong impulse. So I sat with that. And about 10 minutes later, there was a knock on the door while I'm sitting there going back and forth in my head. Should I go join them or should I not? Should I join them? Should I not? Oh, I think I offended them. And oh, now they don't think I'm cool anymore. You know, like I was having all these self-doubts. But in the quietness that I could find in between, because I'd been practicing awareness and quietness for many years with Tom's mentoring, I just sat there and allowed myself to be in the discomfort of it. And then there was another knock on my door. I opened the door, and there's a gal named Jennifer standing at the door. I'm just like, oh, hi, Jennifer. She said, hey, John, I'm going over to the research forest to pick wild persimmons because they're ripe now. Do you want to go? And I'm like, yeah, that was why I didn't go to the dining hall. And I knew it in the moment. Like, I got a full body yes. I went with Jennifer. It was quite a bit of a walk to get there. We had to cross over a pedestrian bridge over this big 5-lane highway in both directions and climb under a fence for the shortcut to get into the research forest. And we walked over to the persimmon tree, and it's the only wild persimmon tree on that whole research forest because it was planted by the dendrology teacher decades ago. And she learned about that tree because she was in dendrology lab and they had shown her the tree and said, hey, the persimmons will be ripe like in the next week or so. And they're really quite delicious, you know, if you can get back over here. So she had remembered that and she wanted to go to that tree. So I had this question that I was hanging on to literally in my pocket. I had a seed of some kind of a fruited plant that I could not identify. And I had looked it up. There was no internet in those days. I probably easily could have just taken a picture of it and put it on Google search by image. And it, you know, I would have got the answer. But in those days, there was no such resource. And I was looking through books. I was talking to dendrology professor and the dendrology lab people. And I looked around. I tried everything to figure out what this seed was. I had found it in a raccoon scat. And I was so curious what this raccoon was eating. And I found it right next to the dorms over by the dumpster in the parking lot. So it was an interesting mystery for me. And I was really, because I prided myself in knowing all the seeds that I would find in scat to know what the animals were eating. Like, I'd really done so much research on that and created a whole journal about seeds from different wild fruits. So I'd find wild rose hips, I'd squish them and break them open and pull out the seeds and let them dry. And then I'd study them so that when I saw them in a scat, I'm like, that's a rose hip, or wild grape, or, you know, the various fruits that were growing around wild in the area. So then I would know, okay, the raccoons have been eating wild roses, or the raccoons have been eating the wild raspberries, or blackberries, I should say. And, you know, so here was this seed that was completely stumping me to no end, and nobody knew what it was. And I literally had that seed in my pocket. Yes, I did wash it. Yes, I did clean it. And then I polished it so it wasn't gross. And she hands me this persimmon, and I bite into it, and I hit the seed, and I spit it into my hand, and it's the exact seed that's in my pocket. And it answered so many questions at the same time. It was like, okay, this raccoon has to cross 10 lanes of traffic, you know, 5 in each direction, to get from this persimmon tree, the only one on campus, over to the where the dumpsters were by the dorm. I'm like, how is this raccoon even doing that? So that answer coming to me, that was 100. I journaled it, but of course it brought up more questions. I'm like, how is that raccoon safely going back and forth between the research forest and this dumpster without getting killed by cars? And then I found the answer to that. There was a culvert that went under the highway. Not far from there was a little creek that ran across, you know, the highway through a pipe underneath the highway. And the raccoon was using that as a, you know, a wildlife crossing before that was a popular idea. You know, I tell that story, and it just so happens, you know, I said there's a synchronicity here with the timing of this conversation, because last night I was listening to Craig Foster's new book that just came out called My Amphibious Soul. And he spends a lot of time in that book. And it's, by the way, it's available on Audible right now. And I was listening to the Audible version. And he spends a lot of time talking about the San Bushman trackers that he was trained by and the Zulu person that trained him. And he had spent a lot of time with these master trackers, and he became aware of the conversation. He said, you know, the Bushmen talk about building threads with the animals and the plants and the birds, and these threads, which become ropes over time from building that relationship, that energy flows in both directions, meaning that with the case of the raccoon, right, there's a thread between me and the raccoon, but I don't have any thread with the persimmon at all. I've never met this tree before, right? But the thread, I'm pulling on that thread. I need to know the answer to this question, and I am pulled to it. In the same way, Craig was saying, you can pull the other way too. You can pull things towards you as well. And he tells some brilliant stories of exactly that happening. Encounters with a Cape clawless otter, and a very, very, very interestingly timed synchronicity with a Cape rock crab that is molting. And in 30 years of diving in the False Bay, he'd never seen a Cape rock crab molt, because they do it in secret. But he had just performed a ritual by the request of his friend, who said, I would like for you to design a ritual for me, Craig, that allows me to, you know, move from this phase of my life to the next phase. And so Craig, like, really meditated on it, and he got the idea that he would basically set up a rock crab shedding its hard shell. And when a crab sheds its hard shell, it's soft and squishy and is very vulnerable to predation. So they always do it in secret, hidden places so that they're not vulnerable to predation. That's why Craig had never seen it before. So he had just finished that ritual and was diving through a cave. He had just got the pull to take Giannis to dive through this cave, like an archway, to pass through it as part of the completion of this ritual. They had already done that part where a bunch of people and friends and family surrounded him like his hard shell, and he had to wriggle out
and go into this new phase, right? That was just what he had created. And when they went to swim through that cave, something caught their eye, the movement of something falling from the ceiling of the cave down to the bottom of the cave floor. And when the silt had cleared away and they could see in the clear water, it was a rock crab actually shedding its hard shell and going into that very vulnerable stage. As soon as it finally let go of its hard shell that it was shedding, it immediately scuttled into a hiding place. But Craig said, you know, in 35 years of diving or 30 years of diving in the False Bay, he had never once witnessed a rock crab do that. And it just happened to be right after he had done that ritual for Giannis. So, you know, he talks a lot about that, you know, indigenous people kind of take this stuff for granted. Like, they grow up knowing that this is not only possible, but it's natural and normal. And the grandmothers and grandfathers support these stories and help them to calibrate and get to know the difference between what's coming from my mind as a projection or a wish or anxiety versus what is a legitimate tugging. The Bushmen call it tugging. But, you know, this notion of advanced awareness, when you have a need greater than self, when you have a big question that must be answered, even if it's just coming from an innocent curiosity, which is you building relationship with the wild within you and the wild around you, which is really what nature wants us to do, right? That's how Craig would put it. Like, there's a divine intelligence in the natural world that really wants humans to come back home, you know? And so when you build connection with things through your curiosity, through developing relationships over time, you begin to tap into this greater intelligence that sort of helps to conduct you to the right place at the right time. Because, you know, literally I tracked 99 coincidences until they turned 100, and all of them had all of this in common. You know, there was a great need. There was a deep curiosity. It was coming from my core, very, as Sarah was saying, very vulnerable, very humble place. And then trusting what my body was telling me, learning to use body radar, like, okay, I'm not sure if I should turn left or right here at the fork on this trail, and then kind of facing the right fork and feeling it in my body, and then facing the left fork and feeling it in my body and getting like a, whew, like, yeah, that feels strong. And so going the left fork. And every time you come to this place where you have to make a choice left or right, doing that same thing and listening to that core, as Sarah was describing, coming from your belly, you know, that's pulling you one way or another, right? And learning how to recognize those subtle cues within ourselves is the calibration, right? And to get to that calibration, you know, we have to spend a lot of time in the silence that Sarah was describing as well in her story. And I'm sure Nate is, you know, able to go to that silence very easily. He's been doing this for a long time. But that silence is so important. You know, the busy mind drowns out these signals, thoughts or fears or self-doubt or whatever, you know, the need to be right or whatever it is, you know, but there has to be a point at which you let go of the thinking mind by dropping deep into your senses and trying to find that place of inner quietness. And when you can have that inner quietness and walk in like that gentle walking, fox walking around the landscape, trusting body radar, you'll be amazed at how many times you end up in the right place at the right time.
You know, think about like everything we've talked about, you know, everything from trees and fire to baby bobcats to persimmon seeds to crabs. It's like, you know, it goes underwater even, you know, and so there's something really universal about this. And yeah, I had forgotten about that idea of it's not just a pull, right? Like, so it's not just always that we're getting pulled, but that we can, there's a tug, there's a piece we, when we're actively participating in, you know, that question or that need can really be the initiator of that pull on that thread that then takes us where we need to go. And I hear that echoed in all of our stories too. And yeah, you know, just want to encourage everybody to, you know, really pay attention to those things and cultivate that quiet place inside of you to tease these things out. And journaling is great. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad, John, that you mentioned journaling, because like that helps me keep myself straight around this stuff. I'm like, did that really happen? Wait, what? You know, was I really thinking about that? You know, like you go back in your journal and you find that, oh yeah, you know, you wrote that down, you know, and that that means, you know, that that really did happen. Because that, you know, those doubts, they can get less, I think, the more successes you have. But world we live in, it isn't one of those traditional cultures, at least for most of us, where this is just taken for granted. And so we have to work at that. Yes, yeah, Sarah, what about you? Do you have some more reflections you want to share?
Yeah, around the acknowledging the synchronicities, so important in the journaling to, I guess the way that I would express it, to go back, like backtrack my whole experience, right? Like, what was I asking? What was I feeling? And what was the feeling when the synchronicity came? And there's something about going back and reliving the whole experience and feeling what the feeling was in my body that helps me kind of tune in. And it's not an intellectual knowing, but tune into what is that flow of mystery? What is that? Where is it coming from? Where is it moving toward? How do I actually track that line of mystery that's moving through myself and, you know, all of nature and other people? So that way of calibrating, also, you know, when I kind of feel, maybe I think I'm having a synchronicity or something like that, or I think I have an intuitive hit and then it's wrong, or I think, you know, the animal's over there and it's just not. Okay. So what does that feel like? That was coming from a different place, more of my intellectual mind that thought it knew something or was excited at the possibility of knowing something. So how does that mind feel different? And not getting analytical about it, and certainly not judging ourselves either, but just allowing the data points to build up. And over time, we have embodied knowing of what the feeling is. And again, it's not an intellectual process of knowing in that moment, but it's a habit of following, right? And a habit of tuning in to, oh, there's that feeling. So yeah, I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you, Nate.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. And yeah, John, did you have anything else you wanted to share before we wrap up?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the journaling. You know, there's a reason why. And Craig, again, in his book, you know, The Amphibious Soul, Finding the Wild in a Tame World. Fantastic book. I think everyone who's enjoying this podcast will really like Craig's 6-hour plus deep dive into this topic in a lot of different ways. It's so interesting. You know, why do we journal? We journal, you know, what Sarah just said is so important because maybe our aunts and uncles and elders in our life in modern times can't give us the reflection and the feedback, right? Maybe, you know, my mom and dad, bless them, they're both on the other side now, and they were loving parents, and I, of course, love them so much. And they love me, and they were very good to me. But they couldn't provide that reflection and calibration for me. That was just outside their world. And I was fortunate that I had somebody like a mentor like Tom Brown as a boy who actually took the time to get me to reflect, right? And he cultivated the importance of journaling for me so that I could hear myself and track myself through these stories and experiences in the way that Sarah was just talking about. How did I feel when I was wrong? And I ended up in the wrong place, you know, at the right time, so to speak, and I didn't find what I was looking for versus how did I feel when I did get it right, you know? And that's what Tom had me do in reflecting. You know, when I got to the 99 turns 100, I drove up to the tracker school and told him 99 turned 100. And he looked at me for a second, kind of wrinkled his brow. Oh, you were doing that this whole time, huh? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, great. All right, let's talk about it. But before we do, what I want you to do is I want you to go through all 100 of these experiences and see what they all had in common. Now, how cool was it that I actually had 100 journals to go through? And then the patterns were really quite obvious. It became obvious after reading the first 3 or 4 examples. I'm like, oh yeah, I had a big question. I tried to research it physically. I tried to use all the resources at my fingertips, every field guide, every person I could talk to. Didn't find the answer. It's still a mystery. Ask the question, you know, what are you? What is going on with this? Like, how do I get this answer? And then
letting go, going into that surrendered place that Sarah was talking about, just releasing and releasing and letting go, and kind of forgetting about it, but then trusting body radar. And when I feel like, okay, I'm going from here to there, you know, I'm going from here to my sit spot, on my way, I suddenly, and he says, you know, this is words from Tom's mentor, grandfather, he would say, don't ever walk to your sit area, walk towards it. Meaning that if on the way you feel a pull, you don't have a destination that's so hard that you won't listen to that pull. And, you know, that was what all these things had in common. And, you know, the wandering spirit, allowing myself to wander towards my sit area or towards my fishing hole, but not necessarily beelining, that all these things added up over time. And I began to see the pattern emerging from this, you know, whether I needed to find a bow drill material that, you know, like in Nate's story in an emergency, or a medicine plant or an edible plant, you know, it worked again and again and again, just the way that Sarah and Nate described, you know. So it's a potent ancient conversation that, you know, people who grow up in cultures where this is normal, grow up as children with aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas that reflect with them and help them calibrate, right? So that's why in our modern times, it's so important for us to journal, because there's no one there necessarily to calibrate for us. In fact, if we try to tell the story to even someone who we consider a friend, they might just sort of think we're nuts. Right. And then we'll sort of develop more self-doubt, and then we'll start to feel weird, and then we'll stop wanting to practice these things. Right. So if you find a friend, as Ingwe used to say, my elder Ingwe used to say, if you find a friend who you can share these stories with, who doesn't think you're weird, but also has these same kinds of experiences, cherish that friendship. He calls that a spiritual friendship. And he said, it's probably the most valuable friendship in your life. Take care of that relationship, tend that relationship for your life, because it's the most important kind of friendship you could have if you're a person on a journey like this. So that's what I'd like to share there. And I'll pass it back to you, Nate, to wrap us up.
Yeah, everybody, we recommend you really embrace this, you know, and try it out and take it into your life. And yeah, find those buddies if you can, and yeah, journal, and, you know, trust what the world is telling you, you know, even if it takes 100 times, you know, and it really does open up a whole new world. So, yeah, thanks, John, and thanks, Sarah, for having me as a guest on Tracking Connections podcast. What a special treat, and what a fun topic. I'm happy to talk about this anytime.
Well, I'm glad, because I'm going to ask you to talk about your most recent book, because it's along these lines.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, John. I did write a book over the winter. It came out this spring. It's called Shadow Survival. It is on Amazon. And yeah, it does talk about these things. And I can go down a rabbit hole getting into it, but this is one of the chapters. This is one of the things I talk about in depth. And really, it's been a hot button for a lot of people. And, you know, just like cool people, you know, military people, police officers, you know, people who have, you know, first responders who have like really intense jobs, talking about how like they appreciate that somebody's acknowledging these things for real. So yeah, good stuff. So
yeah, and I really enjoyed reading it too, Nate. And I think it's a great book. And I think now you have two resources, people, to go from here, right? You can listen to Craig's book, you can read Nate's book, and you can also catch Craig on Tim Ferriss's podcast, which is also a wonderful conversation. So but thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Nate. This has been great. Thanks for being with us on Tracking Connection podcast.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Nate. Thanks, John. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.